Zena, I'll always love you.
Welcome everyone to the Zena and Ubers podcast show, aka XNU. My name's Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following the podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 32. This podcast show is for all the Zena and Uber subtext stories out there that have not been given a voice. So hello everyone and welcome back to XNU. I hope everyone is doing well. We are getting better each day. Firstly, I want to give thanks to all those who emailed condolences. I forwarded them and showed them to my wife, and she was very moved by everyone's kindness. So thank you for helping us through a rough chapter in our lives. Thank you very much. Okay, on the recuperating front, my physio has obviously got a second job or a hobby or some really bad fetish, because it must be the likes of S&M. Because I've got to tell you, oh my God, I don't like being tortured. Hell, look, I'm Puerto Rican, we're Spanish, but that doesn't mean I'm into the Spanish Inquisition or anything, okay? It's just, hello? I mean, you want me to stretch what? Where? How many times? You've got to be joking me. But on the bright side, it's keeping my wife entertained on so many levels, but I'm not going there right now. Not doing it. Okay, on to the show. The book review this week is from my friend Heather. Hi, Heather. The book is called 13 Hours, and it's by Megan O'Brien. And this is what the book review says. How long does it really take to fall in love? It's her birthday, but lonely workaholic Dana Watts is at the office late, drafting a proposal. She is interrupted by the very last thing she would have expected, the most beautiful breasts she has ever seen. These belong to an incredibly hot stripper, a birthday present from a friend who thinks she needs to loosen up. Laurel Stanley has never encountered a more ungrateful strippogram recipient than Dana. The uptight project manager makes it clear that she is furious to being distracted from her work and equally appalled by Laurel's occupation. When Dana insists on escorting Laurel from the building, the two women take an elevator ride that changes everything. Stuck with each other for 13 hours after an elevator breaks down, they discover how wrong the first impressions can be, and how right two strangers can feel together. Can everything change in less than a day? Dana and Laurel set out to discover if their passionate elevator encounter can mean more in this fast-paced, erotic story of lust, loneliness, fantasy, and desire. So, check it out and let me know what you think. She says it's a quite good, entertaining story. So I won't go into further detail than that. Let's just say, Heather, I love you, doll, but you're in great company with me. We're both deviants. On another note, I did not get any emails from anyone regarding the idea of a contest for the show. Come on, people, throw me a line here. I'm trying to liven it up and keep you coming back for not just the story, but other things. So if you think it's not a good idea about a contest, let me know. Just type an email, flick it to me, say, yes, good, no, not good. I'll understand, trust me. I won't take it as a personal affront. Okay, off my soapbox now. On to a recap of the show. All right, coming back from the temple, Gabrielle and Zena meet up with Yupan at the palace. Zena encourages Gabrielle to spend time with Yupan and reacquaint herself with him. Zena spends time with Solon and explains to him that she wants him to respect Yupan as he is a good friend of Gabrielle's, plus he deserves the respect of his age. She also tries to explain to him that he must truly believe he can be healed for Yupan to actually help him in any way. Meanwhile, Gabrielle and Yupan talk about Zena and Gabrielle and their love for one another, and how she asks if he approves, and he tells her that he feels that she's finally come home. Then they talk about Solon and how she perceives him and thinks of him. It is there that the truth comes out, that Gabriel was not even aware of, that she is actually jealous of the bond that Xena and Solon have as mother and son. Yupan explains to Gabriel that the bond that she and Xena share transcends all others, and she should not fear it. Later, upon returning to their room, Gabriel finds Xena awake as she could not sleep without her. Gabriel then tells Xena of her revelation with Yupan, and is comforted by the words that Xena tells her that no one, no thing will ever separate them. Xena then asks Gabrielle's permission to make love to her, and does so delicately. So that's where we left off our last two girls, and we continue on with Petal of the Rose, Chapter 12, by the late L.J. Moss. So, on with the show. Chapter 12, For Many a Fellow is So Hard of Heart. Gabrielle led the way, followed by myself and Yupan, into Solon's rooms. He was seated in his favorite chair by the portico that led to the open-air balcony. We were having a warm spell, and he was taking advantage of the early morning southern breeze. So like his mother in his respect, I loved the outdoors so much that I only tolerated the moments when a roof was over my head. Many were the days when Gabriel would find me seated before the window in our rooms. I would sit there, watching a sunrise or a sunset, looking down upon the rose garden that I loved so well, or simply watching the smoke rise from the chimneys of the homes in the villages. Solon and I hadn't experienced any animosity, arguments, or even unpleasantness in quite some time. Gabriel seemed to think that we were all getting along fairly well. Now she prefers to think of the world as half good instead of half bad, as I view it. When it came to Solon, I always seemed to be waiting for him to explode. I don't know why I felt this way, especially considering he was making great strides at civility, perhaps because he was so much like me. The beast inside of me was part of the reason for my unsettled tension. The darkness could lie dormant within me for months. Then a word, even a look, would entice it from its lair. I hated the monster inside, but I also acknowledged that it was much more a part of me as my very blood. If Solon inherited some of his mannerisms and his looks from his mother, could I not have passed on more to the young man than met the eye? It was my own paranoia, to be sure, but it was a bothersome fear that resided in the back of my mind at all times. It was hard to try to remember that I wasn't born with this misfortune. Ares had offered, and I had accepted. I told Gabrielle about the agreeable evening I spent with Solon just last night. I explained that we spoke of many things, including some of my past. I admit that surprised her. There were very few episodes in my life which I felt willing to speak to of others. He appeared proud of the attempt that I made to converse with my son. We really spoke to one another last night, instead of simply parrying back and forth as we usually did.
Solon? Gabriel paused, waiting for his attention. This is the heel I spoke to you about. His name is Yupan. This is Solon.
She turned her head to Yupan.
Solon is visiting us from an emissary from the Centaur Nation.
Hello, Solon responded. He had agreed not to be quarrelsome to the old man, and I think I almost agreed to come along to make sure that that didn't happen.
Good morning, young friend.
Yupan bowed slightly. I noticed something odd just then. An expression stole across Yupan's features, one of almost surprise. He looked suspiciously as if he recognized Solon's face. I shook the feeling away when I saw that Solon gave no similar expression to the recognition to the healer. Yupan sat in the chair beside Solon, ignoring Gabriel in his eye, as if he were no longer standing there. Being so dismissed, we moved away. We sat down at the table in the next room, but still within earshot of the two men.
"Yours is the wagon with the monster painted on it?" Solon inquired. "That is my wagon, correct. The monster is actually a long, or what you would call a dragon."
Gabriel looked at me and smiled. That expression told me that she knew something was afoot. She whispered that Yupan was going into storyteller mode. I took her words to mean that the old man was already treating Solon in the way of a story. We both looked somewhat relieved that Solon was being civil, and not using the belligerent attitude with which he seemed to enjoy shocking people.
"I thought dragons were supposed to be fearsome beasts. I find it odd that a healer would have such a creature as his moniker,"
Solon responded. If you wish, allow me to undress your splint. I would tell you the true story of the Qinglong, Yupan asked.
Sure, Solon asked gruffly. I mean, I guess that's why we're here, huh?
Neither Gabrielle nor I said a word during this exchange. Truth be told, we were both eavesdropping on their conversation. Wrong, I suppose, but Solon hadn't earned our complete trust. I intended to stay to ensure Yupan's safety. But when I saw the old man move about, something told me that he just might be able to take care of himself. I watched as he moved, and I realized that looks could be quite deceptive where this healer was concerned. Frankly, he looked as old as the stones we walked upon, but he held himself in great physical control. The way he walked, spoke, even inclined his head, spoke of a highly trained warrior. I made a note to myself to make the opportunity to learn more about his old friend of Gabrielle's. I suddenly felt the desire to speak with the healer alone, just the two of us. I could just see from the corner of my eye as Yupan moved the low-lying stool and sat down in front of Solon. The healer moved the splint, first from one hand, then the other. I could see the silent pain etched on the young man's face as Yupan manipulated the fingers on each hand. It was easily understood why Solon's grimace grew fierce when Yupan examined the crushed hand. As he worked over Solon and examined his now-healed ribs, he spoke to the young man. His voice took on the same tone as Gabrielle's did when she began to tell a tale. I smiled with the thought of it, as I realized where she learned the technique. Gabrielle arched a questioning eyebrow in my direction. "I'll tell you later," I whispered. "The man I met from Gaul said the dragon is a fearsome animal, a beast that breathes fire, lays waste to the countryside, devours the populace, and kidnaps their maidens," Solon explained to the old man. "The Qin dragon, unlike the creature that you know from the men in Gaul, is considered a benevolent creature, the custodian of rain, river, and lakes, and a harbinger of good fortune. In Qin mythology, the dragon is described as having the body of a snake, the face of a horse, antlers of the deer, and claws of the eagle. The dragon also has the beard of a goat and the scales of a fish. But between you and I," Yupan confided with a smile, "I have never seen such a beast, although records of the dragons in Qin culture go back to the beginning of time. One explanation of how the dragon came to be lies with the warring tribes who were my ancestors. Early societies had as their tribal mascot an animal, for example, a horse or a camel or a fish. This is in fact something we observe even today here in the western portion of the Greek Empire. The conqueror uses the symbol of the lion. The Romans, before they were vanquished, used the eagle. These symbols were used both for religious as well as military purposes, and rather as the conqueror would march with the lion as her standard, these emblems were used as military insignia. The theory goes that as a tribe went to battle and conquered another, it would incorporate some form of the conqueror's tribe's signia. In this way, it is believed the Xia clan, who had a snake as its emblem, annexed states such as the Shang, an eagle. Thus, to the snake's body was added the claws of the eagle, soon the scales of a fish, antlers of the deer, face of the horse, and beard of the goat, all came to be incorporated, and thereby the Qin dragon came into being. So powerful was the emblem of the dragon become that every Qin governor, who rules under the auspices of the governor, has adopted it as his imperial emblem. Dragon King temples were built where the people would pray for blessings and a good harvest, all in the hands of the dragons, as they controlled the rain. Yupan sat back down on the stool once his tale was finished.
So? Solon asked. Can you fix it?
What do you think of my story? Yupan asked, ignoring Solon's initial question.
Oh, yeah. It was interesting. Kind of gave me a different look at the beast.
Yupan smiled. To my fellow Qin, the dragon is an auspicious animal that regulates rainfall and thus controls the yield of the land. Indeed, the dragon is divine, the manifestation of heaven's will and symbol of the emperor, the son of heaven. He finally added, so you see, simply because a being looks and acts a certain way, it does not mean that they have to give in to people's perceptions of them. The dragon looks evil, yet he offers succor to people in need. A man is much the same. Too often, men feel that they must either be hero or coward, and that nothing between exists. Wouldn't you agree, Solon? My curiosity got the better of me, and I glanced quickly at the two men. Solon had just pulled his hand from within the healer's grasp. I will not soon forget the expression upon the young man's face. Solon appeared fearful, as if Yupan had touched a nerve that was now exposed in a way Solon didn't wish for.
Well, my hand? Solon began again impatiently. Do you believe you can help?
The question is, my young friend, do you believe I can help?
Well, I wouldn't have let you poke and prod me if I didn't, Solon countered.
Yupan chuckled slightly. I admit, there is truth to that. Tell me, how did you come to be injured?
I didn't look up, but I could hear the uncomfortable strain in Solon's voice.
The Conqueror and I had a disagreement of sorts, he answered.
Ah, on the field of battle. Well, I feel it's a good thing that the two of you show no animosity after your battle. So, which was it, power or a woman?
What?
I have found that the most altercations take place over one of two things, a fight for dominance or a woman.
Oh, I guess it was power, Solon answered.
You don't sound completely convinced.
Yupan continued his prodding.
Maybe. Maybe a little of both,
Solon responded, but his voice lowered so he could barely hear him.
Elaborate, please, my young friend.
Yupan continued, ignoring Solon's apparent discomfort at the turn of the conversation was taking.
Look, it's over with and done with. Is this really necessary?
Solon snapped.
You feel shame over your actions, Yupan countered.
No. There was a short pause before Solon answered again.
Yes, he whispered. Do you feel that your actions were dishonorable?
Yupan asked. I was looking into another room when Solon raised his head and his eyes met mine. I couldn't tear my gaze away from the young man.
Yes, they were dishonorable,
Solon answered in a soft voice. His eye continued to look into mine, and I realized that this was as close to an apology as he'd come so far. I nodded my head in acceptance and turned my face away to give the two men the illusion of their privacy. Gabrielle reached over the table and took both my hands in her own. She didn't look up, but I felt her action spoke of her acknowledgement of Solon's words as apology also.
Shall we begin, then?
Yupan asked. He once more took the seat before Solon, never even waiting for the young man's answer to his question. I heard Solon cry out a few times. When I looked into the room, I could see Yupan slowly manipulating the fingers in Solon's hand, the one that wasn't injured nearly as bad as the crushed one. The healer had two long needles that he occasionally inserted into Solon's skin. Most of the time, the healer sat with his eyes closed, his head kept at a slight tilt, and his fingers appearing to massage the skin under his fingers. I remember the intense feelings from when my own crippled leg was healed in this fashion, a sort of paradoxical collection of impressions. I remember feeling an incredible pain, acute pleasure, along with the sensation of absolutely nothing at all. Another sharp cry of pain, and I watched as Yupan pulled away from Solon and sat back down in the chair. "It cannot be," he muttered in an exasperated tone. Gabrielle seemed to take that as some sort of cue and rose to her feet. I quickly followed her and watched as Yupan rose and stretched his body. His fingers slowly massaged his temples. He looked at both of us and then addressed Gabrielle. "He can't let go," Yupan said in a puzzling sentence that somehow Gabrielle alone seemed to understand. "Unless he can let go of it here," he pointed to his head. "And here," he placed his hand over his heart. "It will not work. I need to relax now. In this case, my noir, your wisdom may help the most." Yupan ended the cryptic statement by leaving the room without even glancing at Solon or me. Gabrielle turned to gaze at me briefly before moving to the window. She faced away from the two of us, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of the whole scenario. I was fairly certain, however, that Yupan's word to Gabrielle meant something quite profound. Even now, I could tell by the way she positioned her body that she was at war within herself. Solon's impatient words brought me out of my reverie.
"Is someone going to tell me what's going on?" he said to no one in particular.
"Gabrielle," I called her gently, unsure myself of what had just happened.
"She said if I believed he could do it, he'd do it. Well, I believed."
"It's your chi," Gabrielle stated simply, still looking out the window.
"My chi? That mind-body thing? I remember. What's wrong with it?" Solon asked.
His question surprised me. I hadn't realized that he and Gabrielle had discussed the healing methods using inner energy. Gabrielle finally turned and she crossed the room, pulling me away from Solon so that her words could not be overheard.
"Zina, I need to explain to Solon, but I fear the story I ought to use will anger you. It was from a time when someone hurt me. I thought, well, maybe you wouldn't want to stay," Gabrielle said, lowering her eyes from mine.
"Little one," I answered, lifting her chin with my hand. "If you are brave enough to face the demons of your past for my son, should I be any less courageous?" She smiled nervously, then squeezed my hand. She turned back to Solon, and I tucked myself away in a corner, trying to make myself as little of a hindrance as possible. I also know that if Gabrielle warned me, then this tale would not be a pretty one. I could already feel the hairs on the back of my neck prickling at the mere thought of anyone harming this woman.
"Solon, Yupan is trying to say that you do believe in the power. In your head, you believe. I told you before that this healing with the inner energy takes more than the physical, but the spiritual too, mind as well as body. You're holding onto some powerful emotions, and they're keeping you from listening to your heart, to your inner self."
"I don't know what you mean,"
Solon answered sullenly, but a tiny awareness dawned within his expression, and I think he did understand at least a little about what Gabrielle was accusing him of.
"Solon, it was said by a learned man that he who knows much about others may be learned, but he who understands himself is the more intelligent."
Gabrielle moved to sit down on the stool in front of Solon.
"I'm not saying you're lying. I'm simply saying that perhaps you're not even aware of these emotions. Sometimes feelings like these lie deep within us, and our conscious minds are unaware that they exist."
"So, how can I fix something if I don't even know about it?" Solon asked.
Gabrielle smiled at the intelligent question.
"By using a form of meditation called One with Nature, it will enable you to calm your mind and relax your body at the same time. It will bring your thoughts and chi in alignment with nature's thoughts and nature's chi. It's a process of looking inward at ourselves. Let me tell you a tale that I learned from a philosophy teacher in Qin. A young student went with his learned master to visit the temple of the three monkeys. The master asked, 'Who are the three monkeys?' The student looked at the statues before him and replied, 'See no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil.' The master said, "Close your eyes and look again." The student was puzzled at first, but it didn't take long for him to respond. "Yes, I see another monkey." The master asked, "Who is that monkey?" A thought suddenly came to the student's mind. He answered, "Think no evil." The student showed us the process of being one with nature. First, he asked himself a question, and second, he saw the solution inside of his mind. With his eyes closed, he couldn't rely on anything but his own heart for the answer. Gabriel finished. For the next two candle marks, I watched as Gabriel taught Solon some meditative techniques that were not unlike the ones I had learned from my many seasons spent in Chin. Gabriel showed infinite patience with the young man, but at one point, Solon gave up.
"Look, I don't understand what you want from me here. I can't see any hidden feelings that would keep me from having this healed."
He held up his mangled hand in front of Gabrielle. Gabrielle took a deep breath, and I could see that she was tired. I could also see that she now realized that she would tell the story that she held back until now.
"Solon, we all have positive and negative energy within us. In its simplest terms, positive energy is love and acceptance. Negative energy is hate and anger, and all the emotions surrounding those feelings. It is the negative chi that I can see holds you back, even though you can't see it within yourself."
"Oh yeah? And what makes you such an oracle?"
"Because I felt it too. I felt hate, anger, loathing, and disgust. I was hurt once, so badly that even Yupan wasn't sure I would live."
"I don't need to hear about this," Solon said quickly.
"No, I would like to share it with you," Gabriel responded. "I was raped, you see. Not an altogether uncommon occurrence for a female slave, but it was the vicious manner in which my attackers used me, as if for sport. I wasn't simply violated sexually, but I was beaten, my bones were broken, and I was tossed aside and left for dead. Somehow I ended back with Yupan, and he attempted to heal my body. But it wasn't until he taught me how to heal my soul that I was able to truly benefit from his miraculous physical healing."
Gabrielle had captured both of us in this magical spell she wove as a storyteller, and I wondered if she did this to calm the fury that would have raced through me otherwise. Even Solon appeared to have lost his earlier expression of discomfort.
"I was still holding on to those powerful emotions, that negative energy that prevented me from feeling the benefits of Yupan's healings. My own hate held me back. It was a hate for the animals that committed the crimes. I spent long hours wishing them dead, plotting in my mind the many ways I would take my revenge. I envisioned how much better I would feel if they were made to pay, if they had to suffer for the things they did to me. My emotions may have been righteous, but they were negative. It took all the power within me just to keep them fed, till one day, Yupan finally convinced me of the harm of such emotions. He showed me how to release them."
"You forgave the monsters that did that?"
Solon asked incredulously.
"There is a difference between forgiving someone to help yourself and doing it to offer them some sort of absolution. Just as there is a difference between apologizing and admitted wrongdoing in a matter. Just because one says they're sorry doesn't mean that they are weak or admitting wrongdoing."
"So, you seem to have all the answers tonight. Who do I have all this negative energy directed against?"
He asked the question in a highly sarcastic tone, but I could tell that he wanted to hear the answer. Either he wanted confirmation of what he truly felt, or he was merely testing Gabrielle.
"I believe what holds you back from the healing is a certain unresolved anger at your mother."
"Just like that," she said it. "Hades, didn't I know that already? Didn't we all know it?" The truth of her answer lay in Solon's unwavering reply.
"I have other issues," he answered. "You would never understand."
"I understand that your hate is over things past, things that you could not possibly undo with all the talents in the Greek Empire. It's time to let go of that anger, Solon, and embrace your future, for your own sake, if for no one else's. The only person you hurt with your hate is yourself. Xena would go on being Xena until the end of her days. She will be the conqueror, and she will continue to make judgment calls such as the one she made at your birth. She will continue to make these decisions for good or ill. She will forever make choices in her life, some that possibly may affect you. She will do so, continuing to make the best decision she can, given the information she has at the time. One thing will always remain constant, however. That is the fact that she will make decisions without your opinion or assistance, and somehow, some way, you will have to find a way to live with them. You are holding a grudge, Solon, and although you think you hurt your mother with your ways, you hurt yourself far more. Solon didn't even try to deny any of it. He just sat there, he and Gabrielle staring at one another.
"I've been holding on to it for an awful long time," he half-choked. "It's hard to change who I am."
"But who are you really, Solon?" Gabrielle asked quickly. "I had another teacher called Cheng Shouqi. He told a story. Once Cheng Cho dreamt he was a butterfly. A butterfly flitting and fluttering around, happy with himself, and doing as he pleased. He didn't know he was Cheng Cho in the dream. Suddenly he woke up and there he was, solid and unmistakingly, Cheng Cho. But he didn't know if he was Cheng Cho who had the dream he was a butterfly, or a butterfly dreaming he was Cheng Cho." Gabrielle stilled, letting the insightful words and her underlying teaching techniques wash over the man. "Solon," she reached down and touched his hand. "A man is what he thinks. It's just that simple."
"Nothing is that simple,"
he hissed. He jerked his hand away from Gabrielle, and we both looked at him in surprise.
"You don't get it. I can't be healed. I can never be healed. There's too much," he choked,
and Gabrielle and I looked at one another. Neither one of us was aware of what had spurred the boy to such hysterics.
"Solon, it's easier than you think to soften your heart. Forgiveness can be easy."
"Don't you hear me?"
he shouted back at her.
"How can I be healed? Forgiveness? How can I forgive anyone when I can't even forgive myself?"
He seemed quite hysterical now, and Gabrielle moved from where she sat to stand beside me. Tears streamed down his face, and his body shook the force of his cries.
"Calm down, boy. What's got into you?" was all I could ask in my own confusion.
"Solon, take it easy. I know you and I have things to deal with, but I'm sure we can—"
"It's my fault!"
Solon said suddenly. The sound of his voice stopped all thought of the conversation in the room. His crying had stopped, and his voice held such intent. It was deadly calm tone.
"On that ship, that night, Gabrielle, I let them do that to you,"
Solon finally said. I could feel Gabrielle's whole body tense beside me.
"You were there that night?"
Gabrielle said in confirmation. Her voice sounded small and frightened, quite as bit as it did when she first came to live with me. I was somewhat lost myself. I could only look between the two of them, Solon shaking and crying, Gabrielle listening but uncomprehending. It only took a few more heartbeats for me to gather the pictures in my mind of what Gabrielle must have looked like after they had beaten and abused her, the helplessness she felt, and surely feeling her life was at an end. I could feel my own hands begin to shake as I saw the face of my son along with the others aboard that ship that night. I didn't even hear it, but I felt the reverberation of the growl within my chest as I took a step towards Solon.
"I didn't do anything,"
he shouted, as he held one hand up to protect himself. He must have remembered this look on my face, the expression that told him that his days as a living being were over. I stopped abruptly, watching as the young man tortured himself more than I could have.
"Don't you see?"
he shouted as he slammed his injured hand against the arm of the chair. He cried out in pain.
"That's the point!"
His tear-filled voice lowered to a whisper.
"I didn't do anything. I never helped them, but I didn't stop them either. I just let it happen."
Solon slipped from the chair, sobbing. I felt Gabrielle's hand pull away from mine and watched as she disappeared from the room. I wanted, needed to run after her, to assure myself that she was all right. After all the compassion and friendship she shown Solon,
To be dealt this blow must be too much for her. I looked towards the door she just exited, then down to the heap on the floor that was my son. For the first time in my life, I did what Gabrielle would have done.
Solon,
my strained voice said as I knelt beside him on the floor. He was sobbing like a 5-year-old child, and so I did what one is supposed to do in such cases. I put my arm around him and held him, completely unsure of what to say. What does one say to someone who confesses his guilt, especially when that person is well and truly guilty? I was warring with my own conflicting emotions at the moment. Should I be comforting the man who just admitted to this crime? It felt awkward at first, me holding on to my grown son as he cried tears for more than one past incident. I didn't know how I knew, but somehow I felt as if Solon were releasing a lot of the past, not merely this one's occurrence. He was a grown man, yet his body felt so small and fragile against mine. Here we were, a mother who was more warrior than anything else, comforting her child who was no longer a child. It may have seemed odd, but then again, wasn't this what every child thought of his mother? When a youngster fell and skinned his knees, didn't he run to his mother? Didn't he run to her for more than comfort, but for protection also? Deep inside, didn't all children believe their mothers were warriors? I sat there and stroked his hair, thinking of nothing to say that could make us any feel better. I could do no more than hold him against me and offer consolation as he purged himself of his past hurts and memories. I was simply amazed that he turned to me for his reassurance. Me, the conqueror who was more warrior than mother, and Solon, the son who was more boy than man. To be continued in chapter 13. I dare no more acknowledge my own name.
I found her at the lake, not too far from the castle. During the warm summer days, it had been a favorite place of hers to lie about and write in her scrolls. It was the first place I looked. She never turned around when I walked up behind her. She was seated facing the water, her knees drawn up under her chin, and her skirt tucked around her. The wind blew her hair about, shrouding her face in a cloak that prevented me from seeing her features. I heard her sniffle, though, and I knew she must have been crying. The pain of that notion sliced into my heart like a dagger. Gabrielle, I touched her shoulder. She didn't pull away from me, but she turned her head aside. "Are you angry that I stayed to comfort Solon?" I asked.
"He's your son,"
she answered flatly. "And you are my wife," I retorted.
"Not yet,"
she sniffed. "Perhaps not by ceremony, but in my heart we are already wed. You know this, don't you?"
"How could he?"
she asked tearfully.
"How could he have been there and done nothing? What sort of human can actually do that?"
"I don't know, love, but I do know that it has affected him deeply. If it's any consolation at all, his very soul seems tortured over his actions."
"I don't take solace in his pain, but how can I forgive him, Zina?"
she whimpered. "Did I not just hear you say that forgiveness is not so much about absolution for another, but for the peace it offers you inside yourself?" I answered. "Gabrielle, know that you have to do nothing that you don't want to. You are a free woman now, and no one can ever again force you to do anything you don't want to."
"But he's your son,"
she answered as if everything hinged on that little point. Perhaps, to her, it did. "Gabrielle." I reached out and drew her face towards me. I brushed the golden hair away and cupped her cheek with one hand. "Solon is my son, and I have come to care for him. For hear me when I say this. If you were to ask, I would send him back to Calypus this very day. If it were your wish, there would never be contact between Solon and me again." She looked up to me, and I feared that I had said the wrong words anyway. Her tears began anew.
"Why would you do that? He's your flesh and blood."
"Yet you are my life," I answered,
You are the air that I breathe, the water that I drink. You are what gives meaning to my life, and the reason that I live. You are my substance. When all others left me at the wayside, dying of thirst, it was you who offered me a drink. If those reasons aren't simple enough, I would do this because I love you, little one. It was then that she fairly dove into my embrace, and I smiled.
Oh, Zena, I don't want you to lose your son.
For once, I had spoken from the heart. I said the right words, and that pleased me greatly.
Yes, I admit, I recognized the young man immediately.
Yupan said as he slowly poured a tea into the cup for each of us. Gabrielle and I sat with the healer in his room. We had agreed to go to Yupan first, believing he might know more of that night. We sipped at the steaming brew and waited as the old man settled himself in a comfortable position on the floor.
The night is not one I will soon forget.
He nodded in Gabrielle's direction.
It made even an old man, such as me, thirst for vengeance. I used to lose my temper too easily as a young man, and I thought my ways of violence were mended. When I looked upon my small Nua, I felt all the old anger bubble forth. My student woke me in the middle of the night. I peeked through the curtains and saw a young man. In his arms, he held a small woman, but being unable to see her face at the time, I never would have thought it to be our Gabrielle. By the time I put on my robe, the young man fled. He left a pouch of talents, telling my student to heal the woman, and that her master would come for her later. The young man was your son, Tong Zixi.
Someone attacked me, then brought me to you?
Gabrielle asked in wonder. Her question made it apparent that she didn't quite believe Solon when he had said he didn't join the men in their debaucheries that evening.
I have found that it is extremely rare for a man to treat a woman so, then bring her to the healer.
No, Nua, I do not believe the young man harmed you in any way. I saw none of that blackness within his heart. He never returned throughout the whole season you lived in my home, and he never told your master where you were either.
Yupan responded.
Wait a minute, I interrupted. You mean you lived with Yupan for a year? What of the man who owned you? How did...
Yupan held up a hand, and I went immediately silent. Perhaps we should shed light upon the past. Some little time after Delegate Gabrielle had been lost in a game of chance to the pirates who owned the ship in question, I was given my freedom. I had saved and purchased my freedom from a forgiving master. It was my home that Gabrielle was brought to that evening. I practiced the healing arts and taught my students the same. The night in question, I did not think I would have a patient to care for come the morning. She was badly off, many hurt to attend, physically as well as mentally. It took much time for the girl to finally fight her way back. She accomplished what no other patient of mine has ever done, and she has truly become my best pupil. I knew I held tears in my eyes as my mind's eye conjured up the images of my little Gabrielle and her broken body. She reached out, took my hand, and smiled at me in reassurance. How like her when it should have been me hurting, when it should have been me heartening her. It must have been so painful for you, my little one, I said.
I don't know, Zena. I don't remember any of that season that I lived with you, Pan,
Gabrielle responded. Nothing?
No, she answered quickly. It's missing time from my life.
But, I began,
perhaps the rest of the tale should be told with an audience of only one.
Yupan interjected tactfully.
May I suggest that we reconsider young Solon's healing?
He looked between the two of us. I'm not sure Gabriel's up to confronting Solon just yet, I added.
No, Xena. If Yupan believes that this might soften Solon's heart to the healing, then we can't deny him his chance. I can do this.
When she set her jaw in that determined sort of way that she possessed, I absolutely believed her. She truly is your best pupil, Master Yupan, I said. Then I watched as Gabrielle blushed. Perhaps it was unnecessary, but I bestowed the title of master on this old man, for truly there was much more to him than met the eye. If Yupan had one jot of influence on Gabrielle's edification, then he indeed as a master educator.
There is no better time than the present, Yupan said.
The old man rose, fully expecting us to follow him. I allowed him to take the lead for one reason only. He walked through the door and out into the stone corridor. It was then that I slipped an arm around Gabrielle's waist and stole a most pleasant kiss. I paced and Yupan watched. His head never seemed to tire from swiveling to and fro, watching my movement. The man's calm demeanor could drive a Histian priestess to hard drink. Gabrielle sat at Solon's bedside for a long time. They whispered to one another in voices so low that even my hearing couldn't pick up a few of the words exchanged. I wondered if Gabrielle would share with me what they were saying. I knew, however, that I would not ask her. I suppose I mostly wondered if they were discussing only their mutual past, or if my pitiful presence was a mother figure in Solon's life came up. Gabrielle cleared her throat, and when I looked up, she was standing there in the doorway, her eyes swollen slightly from another bout with tears.
Yupan, Solon regrets his early behavior and wishes to know if you would consent to meeting with him again,
Gabrielle asked the healer. We all knew it was all formality, but I still think I held my breath a bit before I saw the old man rise and walk into the other room. Are you well, little one? I asked as tenderly as possible.
Yes, love, I am.
And between you and Solon? Is it settled between the two of you? I continued to prod.
Xena, he was a boy in a man's body. He did what he did because he was afraid.
Gabrielle responded with her usual compassionate tone. Fear is no excuse, I hissed in response. Now it was I who was angered. I feared that perhaps Gabrielle was doing this because she knew what it meant to me. I should have known her better.
My love,
she squeezed both my hands.
Who am I to discount someone's fears? I lived most of my life in abject terror for my life, doing whatever others forced me to do because of it. I won't disregard someone's fears.
We moved to the other side of the room, out of eyesight, but within earshot of Solon and Yupan. We sat on a low-lying couch so I could hold Gabrielle close to me. Still, I listened to the sounds emanating from the other room.
We meet again, my young friend.
Yupan greeted Solon as if nothing out of the ordinary had happened on what was turning out to be an exceedingly long day.
Let me explain my life's work to you, my friend. Would you mind indulging an old man?
Please, I'd like very much to hear, Solon answered. I was growing sleepy, having leaned back on the couch. Gabrielle snuggled close to me. I closed my eyes and listened. Solon sounded like someone else just then, and perchance he was. Have I not changed? Am I the same conqueror who ruled this land 5 or even 10 seasons past? Hades, am I the same woman who crept down on my knees to convince this woman I now hold in my arms that she didn't steal food from my table? I opened my eyes and found green eyes staring back at me.
I felt you thinking of me,
Gabrielle commented dreamily. I chuckled and pressed her closer. Indeed I was. All happy thoughts, little one. Always happy thoughts of you.
Again I shut my eyes and relaxed. We are such different women now, grown different in such short a time. Why should it surprise me that this magic that now coils through my life should not touch every single person living within these walls? I relaxed even further as I heard Yupan explain the philosophy of his art.
A well and healthy body is a perfectly balanced machine. The idea of pairs of opposites hanging balanced against one another, such as day and night, sun and moon, light and dark, is expressed by yin and yang. Qi, which you pronounce qi, is often translated as vital force, vital energy, or life force. Qi is both energy and matter. Qi flows in, around, and through the body in channels or meridians. I use my knowledge and my ability of my own qi, along with nature's qi, to look at what is out of balance within your own vital force. Through sight, sound, touch, the incessant questions I ask you, and my stories, I treat the cause of your illness directly. To treat the cause and, at the same time, support and encourage your body's own ability to cure the illness, in this case, to mend broken and bruised areas that exist within you. In my language, this is called Fu Xiang. A rustling sound of cloth moving reached my ears. I was becoming as hypnotized as Solon must be by the healer's tone. Whether you realized it, Gabrielle already taught you the breathing and meditative techniques called Qi Chong. This works by manipulating or affecting the flow of Qi through exercise, breathing, and meditation. Qi Chong exercises produce very strong healing effects. You may note that even the conqueror has a daily practice of using Qi Chong. I have seen her on the balcony. This daily use of Qi Chong maintains a good health and prevents illness before it starts. What you have already experienced in the massage techniques on your hands. This is Tu Na and is translated as pushing and pulling. It refers to a system of massage, body manipulation, and stimulation of acupressure points by hand. Listen, my young friend, and I will tell you a story as I work, Yipan finally said.
Wang Xiaojun was born Wang Jiang in Zigu County, Hubei Province. She was a Han Dynasty court lady, married off to a ruler of the Xingyu, or as you say, Huns. In her teens, she entered the palace as one of the numerous candidates for whom Emperor Yang Di chose his concubines, said to number in the thousands. Again, I do not know this to be fact, as I did not see them all, but I suspect some exaggeration may have occurred. I could hear the smile in Yupan's tone. Wang Xiaojun was a daring and determined young woman who entered the court willingly to save her father, a scholar official, from persecution. She was beautiful, intelligent, and well-read. So confident was she of her own beauty, or perhaps so honest, that she refused to bribe the court painter. The artist Mao Yanshu accepted bribes when he did portraits of the candidates from which the emperor used to choose his concubines. As a result, he painted an unflattering picture, and she was passed over by the emperor. She did not like the thought of wasting her life in court, and hoped that someday something would happen that would free her from her painful existence. Sometime later, Xiongnu, a nomadic people to the north, who you call the Huns, wished to establish friendly relations with the Han Dynasty. Their Shanyu, or Khan, came to the Han capital, Zhengzhe, and requested a Han princess as a bride. This was a way of cementing relations between two lands. Instead, Han Emperor Yuan Di thought he would send one of his imperial concubine candidates and give her away like his own daughter. He asked for volunteers. Of course, the idea of leaving their homeland and comfortable life at the court for the grasslands of the far and unknown north was abhorrent to most of the young women, but not to Wang Xiaojun. She saw it as chance to leave the empty palace life and possibly play a far more important role than she ever would in Zhengzhe. She requested and was accepted. She left her homeland in China and died many years later in a country far to the north. It is an unfortunate event in life that women have always been so married in the interest of diplomacy. Wang Xiaoju was the exception to the rule, however. She chose her life's path, so did not let it choose her. You see, my young friend, selecting your path is of the utmost importance. Choose for yourself, Solon. Do not let the fates choose for you. To be continued.
Well, that concludes this episode, number 32, of the Xena and Ubers podcast show. That is chapters 12 and half of 13 of Petal of the Rose, part 2, by the late L.J. Moss. So, if anybody has any suggestions on either song, movie, or book that they'd love to recommend and forward on, or even just some suggestions for the show, please send me an email at xena.uber@gmail.com. Remember, everyone, I'd appreciate if you could also send me an email regarding the idea of the contest. So, all you listeners out there, and I know there's quite a few of you, just drop me a quick email and say yes or no, so this way I know which direction to take the show with. Okay, so until the next episode, everyone, please take care, enjoy life, and love. Bye-bye.